C2A. Number 1B.
Point 4. Christ reconciles man to God. This is an important point. Here she brings out the direction of atonement. Does man atone with God, or does God atone with man? This is a great question. Apparently, in the theological view, through the mediator of Jesus, God says, okay, I'm all again one with you men. Okay, atone with you. I forgive you. So everything is okay again. So that the theological direction of atonement is actually that God atones with men and is again quite happy with men. Whereas Mrs. Eddy says, no, the direction of atonement is always from man to God, and not the other way around. Man has to submit itself to the divine decree, and man has to be in obedience and in unity with the divine principle God, and that brings him to the atonement with God. So we feel at once that we cannot just ask God to atone with us. That prayer says, I must have an attitude, an inward spiritual attitude that is open to God. And atonement and Eucharist says, and now you go and atone yourself with God by laying down everything that stands in your way. So can you see that the demand is constantly here in the second chapter, that we lay aside, that we lay down what is not of divine nature. So it is at the beginning, it seems to be a quite a hard chapter, but as we go on through the week and through the chapter, we'll see that it is quite different at the end. Point 5. There is no reconciliation of truth and error. This is again a big point that would show that there is in no way a possibility that truth and error are reconciled, that truth reconciles itself with error, or that error reconciles itself with truth, that they are apart and that they can never be reconciled. You know, our inward attitude is different. Our inward attitude is speculating with God and says, well, you know, dear God Almighty, I'm not so bad as you think. And we begin to justify ourselves and then ask that God is quite happy with us again and reconciles himself with us as if truth could reconcile itself with any erroneous mentality. Therefore, atonement and Eucharist will demand correction. Will demand correction before we have atonement, before we have reconciliation. So it shows really something very powerful that the Christ idea will not really stop until its impact on our consciousness is such that we bend our knees and give in and says, okay, I see I cannot resist God, I cannot resist the Christ idea, I cannot resist salvation, I cannot resist what the Christ idea wants to do with me, I cannot resist what the Christ idea has foreseen as my mission and as my plan. I cannot resist that, and so I better give in, and that is then reconciliation. Point 6 says that man cannot atone for himself, that he actually needs the Christ idea to atone, that man has in himself not enough divine authority to atone. This is a big point because I don't know how much you know how theology criticizes Christian Science, and one of the big points always is that they bring forward is that Christian Science teaches the self-salvation. And naturally that is not true, because they think that way, because naturally through the whole textbook goes that tone that we say, by understanding God, we can heal ourselves. By understanding God, we can save ourselves. So they feel that we do not need the Christ. All what is needed is that we understand God. Well, that understanding God naturally includes the Christ's power. The understanding of man has no power by itself. The understanding of man is only then empowered when our understanding is one with God. Then God comes to us. So through our atonement, through our atoning with God, we come to the point of atonement with God, and that has the Christ power and saves us. So man cannot atone for himself, she says. We need the Christ truth for that. So we need that when we see the truth about the situation, that we really bend our knees, that we really give in to the truth, that we begin to be humble and meek enough to bend our knees and not to be a stiff-necked nation, and therefore give in to that atonement with mind, and atonement with spirit, and atonement with soul and principle, life, truth and love, and let that atonement, that unity of man to God, be the Christ power to a situation, so that it is the Christ power that will take care of any mistake and of any erroneous situation. We come to point 7, namely our atonement. What is then our atonement? And here she shows that further step and says, if truth is overcoming error in our daily life. Can you see, it's not man saving himself. It is that man in unity with truth overcomes error. Only when truth, capital T, overcomes error in our daily life, we have the atonement. Or she says that our atonement requires constant self-immolation. Can you see again that demand on us that the Christ has, which says you have to give up your mortal ego, you have to give up your mortal sense, you have to give up your personal sense, you have to give up a mortal sense of life. That is self-immolation, so that you only have one self, one ego, and that's the divine ego. And without that, there is no atonement of man. Man is atoned when truth, capital T, is overcoming error in our daily life. That's atonement. And again, you can see it's not just wishful thinking. I will bring this out again and again. You don't mind if I bring it out about 50 or 100 times this week, because I see in this point really something that we have perhaps as students of science not nurtured clear enough. We were perhaps too much thinking that we can save ourselves through clear-cut thinking, through scientific thinking. Well, that's necessary. That's a starting point. But the second chapter already says this is not enough. You will be only saved and atoned through your life experience, by showing forth that the life is in agreement, is in unity with your ideal, with your understanding. So always and always we can see that it is actually life experience which brings us forward, that really that substantiates properly our inward attitude and becomes substance and becomes reality, and only that then gives us a firmer and a firmer and a firmer standpoint where we feel more secure and more secure and more secure. And the measure that we become more secure, we feel that we have within ourselves a divine power, a spiritual power that we have within ourselves, a king and a counselor that is ruling, and only that is really showing forth a new sense of life. So we must see that, therefore, it's not just studying that will do the trick. Many students give lots of hours for study. That's fine, that is necessary, that's the beginning, that's the first step, it's the concept building. But then afterwards, we must see that that is not the end of it. That we cannot say, well, because I've studied a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot and a lot, that this will do it, and that is all that is required. But the dominant Eucharist doesn't say that at all. Our dominant Eucharist comes along and says, you know, really, your life experience is that which saves you. So you have to exemplify it. Now, this exemplification must not naturally be according to the Christ idea and not according to human moral standards of things. That doesn't work. So therefore, the chapter is the Word as a Christ, and therefore the Christ, as we will see in this chapter, has the dominant tone, is the dominant power, and not just average human moral state of things that says this is a good life. The good life is only the life that lives the Christ impulsion, and only that is really life in Christian Science. We come to point 8. At the point 8 we see that there is no vicarious atonement. Another big point: theology believes in vicarious atonement, namely Jesus atoned for us all, for the whole world. He took on him, theologically speaking, the sins of the world, and he saved us. And so he is the mediator that has done the work, and we can only come to him and say, please, I believe in you, I have faith in you, help me. So this is the sense of vicarious atonement, and Mrs. Eddy shows that this is not Christian Science, that the vicarious atonement is not done either through a practitioner, that he does the job for us, that fundamentally everyone must do it. Jesus did life's work aright. That's how she starts out. It says, he did it aright. But he did not do it for us. Can you see the very opposite of theology? That he did not do it for us. He only did it for himself. And he did it to show to us that it can be done and how it can be done. That's what he did. He relieved us not from one single responsibility. He relieved us not from giving the requisite proof. And he spares us not one individual experience. Can you see the totality of what Mrs. Eddy says? Not one is excluded from him. Each one has to go and do what Jesus did in its principle, that each one must reconcile himself with God, and that there is no vicarious atonement. We reach atonement not because of another's goodness, suffering, and triumph. We reach no atonement through a practitioner's work. He can help us, he can heal us, but the work of fundamental unity with God, each one individually has to do, and he has to go through the experience that are necessary in order to find that unity. We reach atonement not by pinning our faith without works to another's vicarious effort, what we usually do in practice, that we just think the practitioner, he can stay up for the night and can work, and I go on to bed and I sleep and I'm very nice, and in the morning I hope I can ring up the practitioner and say, all is right, you have done a very good job, you have stayed up during the night, you have been working, thank you very much, here is a check. Well, that's not atonement, huh? That is practice through a practitioner, but that's not the pith, really, the core of Christian Science. The core of Christian Science is that everyone finds his unity with God and demonstrates that unity with God himself by laying down himself all that is necessary to be laid down, so that he really finds his experimental unity with God. He exemplifies through experiment and through living and through act that he is one with God. If we don't do that, we never feel secure. We never feel secure. We never feel that we can walk right through life and feel secure and that nothing can touch us. So that point nine, we see that atonement is unavoidable for all. All must do it. Can you hear how Mrs. Zinni now over and over and over shows that everyone and all have to do it? She says, I just give you these statements in order that we hear the tonality of it. You have all these references. She said, we must go and do likewise. Every child, man and woman, must do it. Not a select number of followers should do it. All have the cup of sorrow effort to drink. All men should follow the example of our Master and his Apostle. All must sooner or later plant themselves in Christ, the true idea of God. Can I bring out with that terrific impact that now we are facing a chapter which says now it touches our life core. It doesn't touch so much our thinking and the clarity of thinking. Now it touches the core of our whole being, the core of our life, the very reality of what man is. Yes. We come to the next group of questions, the divine and the human, a very important subject, the divine and the human. Through that whole chapter goes that question, what is the divine, what is the human, what is the relationship between the divine and the human? A very big question, a very necessary question, because we cannot shut our eyes to the fact that we still feel in our heart, in our, even unconsciously, that we are a human being, and we don't yet feel day in and day out to 100% that we are a spiritual idea man. We would just be blind and fool ourselves if we would say that. And the Christian Science textbook is here to show us the way out of that stage, to show how we get out of that human sense of things, of the human consciousness, and says, how on earth can we get out of it to that reality which is fundamental since before Abraham was, that I'm the idea of man. How on earth can I feel that at one moment with the idea man when I more or less day in and day out feel that I'm not the idea man, that I'm a human, that I'm a mortal? This is the saving activity that is indicated here. And under that group we have 3 points, 10, 11 and 12, that show various aspects of this relationship. And here is number 10, which shows that the divine must be made manifest in the human. There are various very clear-cut references in this chapter which bring out the following. She says, the divinity of the Christ was made manifest, you see, exemplified, in the humanity of Jesus. So the divinity of Christ was made manifest in the humanity of Jesus. Now we know that Jesus was not just idea that he had the Christ consciousness, but Mrs. Eddy defines Jesus in the glossary quite clear and says it's the highest human corporeal concept of the idea man. So we see that Jesus, he too had a body like we have. He ate, he drank, he slept. He was happy, he was sometimes cast down. He shared with us a lot of our mortality. So he could see, or Mrs. Eddy shows here, that the divinity, namely the Christ, must be made manifest in the humanity of Jesus, or we could say in the humanity of man, in the manhood of man, and the humanhood of man, that's much better. And she says, the Christ, or divinity, of the man Jesus, says she has the man Jesus, and says he had a Christ, and that was his divinity, was his divine nature, the godliness which animated him. So this is another relationship of the divine and the human, that the Christ, the divinity, animated Jesus, animated the man Jesus. So that this individual ideal of truth, Jesus, she describes here as this individual ideal of truth, was demonstrated throughout the whole earthly, can you hear, career of Jesus. Again, showing that in spite that he had a body, that he had a material birth and took part of the earthly side of a material birth, that still that didn't deprive him of becoming, of being one and feeling one with the Christ, and that that Christ would animate him in his humanhood. So Jesus was the highest earthly representative of God. Can you see that dual nature that is brought out in Jesus? From one side regarded, he knew and he had the Christ consciousness. Regarded from another side, he partook really of the earthly nature of all mortals. So Jesus' mission was what? To prove what God is. That's one thing, the Word. But we are here in the Word as the Christ. And what he does for men. And you can see again, it's the relationship of the divine and the human. To prove what? Never forget this sentence in this chapter. That's another key term. Namely, to prove that God is the power of the messianic work. Can you see that God is the power of the Christ idea of the messianic work, so that there is no self-salvation of man, that man does not save himself, but that man only can save himself through the power of the messianic work, through the Christ. Point 6.11 says that the divine must overcome the human. And we have that reference from this chapter, the divine must overcome the human at every point. So you can see the human has to be overcome. The human is never the divine. We must never try to make the human divine, but the human must be overcome. That must be put aside. That must be overcome. There's a clear-cut statement from Mrs. Eddy which shows the aim of the Christ working, that it says, well, finally, the aim of this second chapter is that man is not seen in his humanity, but that man is seen as the idea man. That will be seen then when we come to the sixth subject. Yeah, so when the human element, she said, struggled with the divine, can you see, the human is not divine. The human struggles. If the human would be divine, he wouldn't struggle with the divine. So here Mrs. Eddy said, because the human element in him struggled with that divine, Jesus said, not my will, but thine be done. Let the spirit be represented in me. And that was the holy struggle. Can you see there is a struggle? Because the human struggles with the divine. The human does not want to give up its beliefs. The human would like to hug the old material beliefs and does not want to be separated from them. Point 12, she says that the human has the ability to reflect the divine. That he can do. The human can reflect the divine. But the human is not the full reflection of the divine. The full reflection of the divine is the idea man, and not the human. But the human is the transitionary stage between the mortal and the idea man. And in that transitionary stage, naturally, step by step, the human is overcome through the spirit and finally yields completely, as we'll see in the chapter on Dominant Eucharist, to the idea man, the spiritual idea man. There is no human idea man. So Jesus spoke of the human ability to reflect divine power. Yes. That is point 12. If we recapitulate 10, 11, and 12, which is one of the main points in this chapter, after having shown what atonement is, that all must atone, that there is no vicarious atonement, that every man, child, and woman must do it, that all through the ages everyone has to do it, he says, what is the process that goes on? And the process that goes on in 10, 11, 12 here, the relationship of the divine and the human, which says to us, the divinity of the Christ was made manifest in humanity. So that our salvation is to start out with the Christ and with the Christ idea, and let the consciousness of the Christ idea dictate our consciousness. Dictate our attitude in consciousness. Then she says, the Christ must really animate us. Can you see? It must animate us. It must be that which we entertain in our consciousness and always feel we work with the Christ idea. That God, therefore, is the power of the messianic work, not we have to fulfill atonement, but we must let the Christ fulfill our atonement. Let God do it. Step out of the way. Let God do it. So that the divine, she says, must overcome the human at every point where we are willing to say the divine must come to the human, to every facet of the human, and bring out the divine. And that we can only let that happen when we bend our knees and give in to the divine decree. So that the human element in us begins to struggle with the divine, and we begin to realize that the human element is not the divine, because it struggles with the divine, so that finally we must see that we give in and have also the human ability to reflect the divine. We always can reflect the divine. We always in consciousness can go back and say, now what is really happening? I can go back really to God and see that God has a Christ and that the Christ is the power in the messianic work.